Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy. And it's a very happy birthday to us and our podcast. We are officially one, Sean.
Happy birthday to us. Oh. Happy birthday.
He's gone there, isn't he? That's just, you know, we got really, really good listening figures for the last podcast. And I think you've just completely destroyed it. Completely destroyed it by singing. 1 year old. We've got there.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Happy birthday. And thank you. Let's get this out of the way straight away. Thank you to every single person who downloads, who's been on, left a review, and has got involved with the podcast over the last year. Who would have thought we'd have made it this far? But we have. And, do you know, I think we might be here for another year, Phil.
I think we might, you know. Do you know, it's actually, we'd mentioned it. We'd said it must be about a year. It's got to be about a year. We need to have a look at it. It must be about a year. And then someone actually, I can't remember who it was, apologies for this, but thank you to whoever it was that tweeted, like 6:30 in the morning on the day, a very happy first birthday to the 147 podcast. Great work, announcer Phil and magician. I was like, oh, okay, well, someone else is keeping track of this. This is fantastic. So, yeah, thank you. As Sean said, look, in the last year, we've been in the Spotify charts for podcasts. We've been in the Apple charts all over the world, not just in the UK, but we have done well in the UK, but all over the world. Blows us away every single time, doesn't it? It's I don't know quite what we expected, but we sat down when we first started and we said, what does success look like? And we both looked at each other and went, do you know what? I don't actually know because we've never done this kind of thing before. But I think what has happened and the figures and the comments, the interaction on social media, it just continues to completely blow us away, Sean.
Yeah, absolutely. The interaction has been great, hasn't it? And I just think for both of us, it's been great for us to connect with, you know, a new audience to some degree. I'm sure a lot of our listeners, you know, are big snooker fans as well, but a lot of people who do download the pod aren't. And, you know, it's been really great to connect. I've really enjoyed it. So many people have come up and said hi at tournaments or whatever. I've met so many people who've listened and who listen regularly, who enjoy some of the sections. Some people don't like some of the sections, but isn't that, that's the fabric of life, isn't it? And I just think, you know, we had a really good idea a year ago. The podcast, the snooker podcast family keeps growing and expanding. You know, we've got our friends at Talking Snooker and Dave Hendon's Snooker Scene podcast. And, you know, we wait with bated breath for the new WST podcast to come out for its 500th iteration so far. And it's a space that's growing. And, you know, I love being a part of it. And I really enjoy, I can't say it enough, that interaction with everyone out there. On social media, they get involved, they write in, they ask us questions. And you know what? We have a bloody good laugh as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, the biggest compliment I think we ever get, personally, I think we ever get is people that aren't necessarily snooker fans or weren't snooker fans before the podcast who say, love it, it's just like listening to two mates in a pub, which I think that was one of our aims, was to make it like that at the start. And I think we've managed to capture that. I was out shopping today. I was out in York, the greatest city on God's earth, and a friend of mine, Grant, came up to me. I was in it, just walking through the shop, and he goes, "You're right, Phil." I said, "All right, Grant." And he says, "You can get some of them supermarket shopping trolley tokens in here, you know." So I was just like, "Really? You're throwing the pod at me from 2 weeks ago? Wow!" But no, it's great. And once the snooker season back up and running again, it's great to see all the snooker fans out there and get the live feedback from them, because they do. People come up at tournaments and events and they comment on it, tell us what they like, tell us what they don't like as well, which is fair enough. And it's always great to hear. So thank you. A huge thank you to everyone. And yeah, we are one and we're here to stay. Let's just say that. Right, Sean, our next podcast will be a special one, won't it?
Will it?
Yes, it will. Looks at me completely blank. We did one last year. Around this time of the year, we sort of forget Championship League ever so slightly, and we'll be doing our season preview on the next podcast. Now, last year's season preview was an interesting one. Obviously, things took a bit of a turn in the season, and some of our predictions didn't come out all that well with certain players. However, we did tip up Luca Brasil as one to watch for having a really good season.
You've been tickling Luca Brasil.
I can officially confirm I have never tickled Luca Brasil. I couldn't afford the flights to Dubai to go and tickle him for a start off. No, we did.
Is Luca Brasil on the run?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, I think he's on the run from his dad, from Carlo at the moment.
He's bought one of the fastest cars in the world, and he's never at home. He's been in Dubai for 2 months.
Do you know what
when he returns, he's going to have the best tan of anyone.
Oh, he's going to be so brown. But I've got to say, how much of that's social media, right? And how much is he actually practicing? Because I don't think Luca Brasil will want to be one of these first-time world champions who then has an absolute shock of the year after. I get the feeling that he's showing us what he wants to show us on social media, but I bet he's still striking the ball, you know. I bet he's still hitting a few around, and I think he's going to hit the ground running. I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
You couldn't predict him, could you? This is the kid who went back to Belgium between his first and second round matches at the Crucible this year and was up partying till 2 a.m. most nights with his friends and supporters. So he may not have been the most dedicated professional snooker player in the off-season. Isn't that his right?
Absolutely.
But, you know, it will be interesting to see from everybody, myself included. It'll be interesting to see how everyone fares in the first couple of events of the season so far. You know, so far we're ploughing on through Championship League snooker. Not every favourite, not every person who's supposed to have won the group has won the group so far.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting moving into the European Masters qualifiers and the Championship itself. You know, who does what and who does what where. You know, of course, it's a very long season, isn't it? You can't put too much stock in these things, but it is always nice to start well.
Absolutely, yeah. And who started well last season?
Luca Brasil.
Luca Brasil won Championship League, didn't he? And he, like we said last time, he bookmarked the season, Championship League at the start, and then he won at the Crucible of the Worlds at the end. So, yeah, starting the season can be very, very important. But we shall see. Like you said, there's been quite a few shocks in Championship League so far, and it rumbles on. So that's the next episode will be our season preview. We got some right last time, some not so right, but it wasn't always our fault. But that will be the next episode we do.
I remember we spoke about this last week, didn't we? We did speak about this last time because yes. I said we should have done the season preview before the season started.
Yeah, that's right, but it hasn't really started.
That's a small detail, is it?
Very minor detail. Right. So that will be okay. Next time. This podcast is another listener question special as we try and get through the huge bank of questions we've had in from people. So that's going to be the main thrust of today's podcast. But before we get into that, what have you been up to, Sean? A couple of weeks since our last pod?
Yeah, I've been doing a few shows. Did a show over in the Isle of Man where I had another sneaky 147.
I think you also broke your nephew, Joshua, didn't you? I saw some pictures. Was it his birthday as well?
Poor Joshua came over, who's a very good amateur snooker player in his own right. You know, he plays in all the tournaments. He's actually on the board of the EPSB, so he's really involved, you know, in trying to help make the amateur game better for all concerned. You know, he'd never blow smoke himself. I'm just trying to give him a bit of encouragement, but he does a really good job behind the scenes. And it was his birthday, so he just decided to join us for the trip to the Isle of Man, which, by the way, was the most difficult trip of my life.
Go on.
Where I live in Dublin, the Isle of Man is about 50 miles from where I live, as the crow flies. There's a ferry to the Isle of Man twice a week, and, you know, there's like Shamrock Airways or somebody flies there once every third quarter if the moon's in the right house and all this, you know. Very difficult to get to. I had to fly from Dublin to Manchester.
Oh, never.
Stay overnight in Manchester to get up the next morning to fly to the Isle of Man, do the show, stay over in the Isle of Man, fly back to Manchester the next night, stay over again in Manchester to fly back to Dublin the 2 days later. The whole trip for a one-night show cost me 4 days.
Oh, wow.
Do you know, which is incredible. And it's only over there.
Yeah, I've done some work there. I've done some work there, and I've got to go back there at some point to do some more work, actually. But do you know about the wallabies? Have we talked about this?
No.
Do you not know about this, no? Oh, this was... Right, this was bizarre. If you don't know about it, you don't know about it, and when you see it, it shocks you. I'm driving along in the Isle of Man, okay, with a colleague in the car. And something catches my eye on the right-hand side in the field. So I'm driving along, and there's like three or four wallabies jumping along through the field, like at pace with the car. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, someone slipped something in my tea here. Is this something's gone a bit slightly awry? So I thought, this is just weird. There's these kangaroo-type creatures hopping through the field. I'm on the Isle of Man. I'm not in, you know, Australia or something. It's weird. So I get to where I'm going to work, and I said to the guy there, I said, I might sound a bit mad here. I said, but you got kangaroos here. He says, oh, you seen the wallabies? Plain as day. Like, sorry? Oh, the wallabies. Yeah, we've got like a whole community of wallabies. Apparently, some breeding wallabies escaped from a zoo or wildlife park decades ago in the Isle of Man, and they've bred and they've bred and they've bred. So there's wild wallabies. It's like herds. I don't know if it's herds or whatever it is of wallabies. Herds of wallabies just wild in the fields. And they've just become like a native species over there. So you see them jumping through the fields. But the first time you see them, if you don't know about it, it absolutely shocks you. If you don't believe me, people at home, Google it, because it is true. This is a genuine thing. There are wild wallabies in the Isle of Man. And oh, I was absolutely taken aback. I had no idea what was going on. It was bizarre. Truly bizarre.
Well, judging by some of the people who are at my exhibition, I think a couple of them might have been related to these wallabies.
Oh, wow. That's you never going back to the Isle of Man then.
They were wild.
Including your nephew, Joshua.
Including my nephew, Joshua. And I must tell this story. It's a very funny story on the night. There's quite a few funny stories, none of which can be repeated on this podcast, unfortunately. But Joshua, as I say, plays to a very, very good level himself. And, we got to the end of the night and there was an auction frame. And of course, you know, we were trying to support the night and he we're having a bit of crack. And Joshua ended up winning the frame to play me to finish the show off. So that was a bit of crack. And like everyone wants to see, you know, the nephew beat the uncle and, you know, all of this is quite good fun anyway. The frame ensues and, you know, we're playing a few trick shots and all the rest of it. And at the end of the frame, I'm lining up. I wouldn't be known for being a really good plant maker. You know, it wouldn't be one of my, a bit like doubles. You know, they say John Higgins is the best doubler in the world. I certainly am not. And I'm not that great at plants either. So I'm sizing up this plant down the side cushion with two reds. And there's a good 18 inches between these reds. And I'm looking at this plant and Joshua calmed the room down and he said to everybody as he brought the room to a hush, he said, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say, if Sean pots this plant, I'll buy everyone in the room a drink.
Oh, wow. That's how many have you had at this point, by the way? Because that is the statement of a drunken man. It's got to be Isn't said.
So he was fully loaded at that point.
Wow.
Of course, I got the plant, didn't I?
Oh, killer. And did he?
Not least spurred on that I just wanted to see everyone get in my nephew's wallet.
I bet you've never wanted to make a plant as much in your life, have you?
It went in without touching the side. It was beautiful. Beautiful. And yeah, those that wanted a drink got one.
Did they really? Wow. Oh, fair play to him then. Fair play to him, because that's, yeah, that's good going, but brilliant. So there you go. Head to the Isle of Man. You'll see wallabies. You might get bought a pint by Sean's nephew. What a place. What a place.
What a weekend.
So Championship League, you're in action this week, Sean.
Really looking forward to it, yeah. Championship League, you know, season opener and all that. You know, I've been doing quite a few shows in the off-season. But apart from that, you know, I've enjoyed a bit of downtime. So, you know, the season must start somewhere. And for me, it starts this coming week.
It does. You are in Group 4. In your group, you have Tian Pengfei, always a challenge, Andrew Padgett from Wales, and Lucas Kleckers from Germany as well. A truly international group, that. Goodness me.
Very international group. I think I'm right in saying that Tian Pengfei, this is niche.
Go on.
Tian Pengfei may have overtaken Fergal O'Brien as having the darkest queue in the world.
Right, okay. Dave Hendon, if you're listening, you may have that one for your podcast. You're slightly more niche than we are as a rule. The darkest queue in the world.
Yeah, I think Fergal for a very long time, it looked like he used to cover his queue in Ron Seal.
Maybe he did.
But I'm pretty sure Tian Pengfei's queue is very, very dark. Darth Vader-like.
Darth Vader-like queue. Goodness me. Top guy, Tian Pengfei, by the way. Really, really nice fella off the table. I know you're going to be hoping to beat him on Wednesday, but nice fella off the table. And yeah, tough group. Every Championship League group's tough. Like you said, there's been quite a few surprises so far, and those surprises, they will continue. I'm sure you hope not in your group, but they will continue as they always do in Championship League.
I think there's two elements for me. I think the first element, obviously, it's the first event of the season and most players have been off. So that always throws in a bit of, you know, doubt. You're not really, really sure what's going to happen. And then a bit like, I think they use them in a couple of other events, but this is significant. The tables are completely different to the ones we use in every other tournament.
Yeah, they use the Rassons, don't they? They also use in the Champion of Champions. Because it, just to explain for anyone that doesn't know, the World Snooker Tour run the main tour. However, there's the Champion of Champions and Championship League, which are run by Matchroom Multisport, I think. Is what it was called, I'm not sure if it still is, but Matchroom anyway. And they use different tables. So they use the Rasson tables, which... I know that the feedback from a lot of players is actually very positive on those.
Well, they're almost different in every way, apart from being green and they've got six pockets. apart from that, they're completely different. The bounce off the cushion is different. The entryway into the pockets is different. So shots that you think are safe on a star, they're not safe on a Rasson because they play more generously down the cushions. They bounce differently. The reaction off the cushion's different. Obviously, the balls we use and the type of cloth we use is the same.
Yeah.
So the ball spins the same. But it's a bit like golfers moving around the world, playing on different types of grass, playing, you know, the tennis players, they're playing on different types of, you know, on different courts. It'd be very easy for the casual observer to watch the snooker and think all the tables are the same.
Yeah,
and they're not. So I think that element always throws up a few surprises at Championship League as well.
So I know Championship League, some of it can be watched on Viaplay. Some of it is actually available on YouTube, I think, or Facebook as well. So wherever you can, if you get a chance, Sean plays on Wednesday in Championship League. Good luck for that, Sean.
Thank you. I think I'll need it, to be honest.
And, right, other snooker news. There's lots and lots of events now gone on sale. Tickets on sale next season, wst.tv/tickets. And there's a change in the dates for the shootout. Have you seen this?
No.
No, there you go. I'll give you a bit of news then, Sean. It is in Swansea for the first time at the Swansea Arena. Who knew there was an arena in Swansea, but there is. It has been moved. It was going to be Thursday to Sunday, the 7th of December to the 10th of December. It's been moved forward a day. So it will now begin on Wednesday, December the 6th, and it will end on the Saturday night shootout, ending on a Saturday. I think that's great. I think that's a really clever move.
What could possibly go wrong?
It's going to be a cracking atmosphere in there, isn't it? A Saturday night in Swansea for the end of the shootout?
Never.
Do you know what?
Absolutely never.
I'm tempted. I've got to say, I think that would be a cracking night. Absolute cracking night. You're playing shootout again this year, Sean?
Yeah, do you know, I really enjoy the shootout. It does have its critics, of course, but I think we're like, you know, it seems to come up every year, doesn't it? But I think it's been around long enough now to earn its stripes. Whether you think it should be a ranking event or not, it is. It does count. And I think you regularly see players moving up and down the rankings around that time of year, looking for cutoffs, seeding cutoffs. You know, whether they're going to be in the next event, it's usually has a role to play in the Players Series. I suppose with it being a bit earlier, it might not affect that as much. But it, you know, it counts. And you know, if you get through to the very latter stages, it can make a difference. You know, look at the past winners, and you know, Hussein Vafai, and you know, it changed his career.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, it's as important. Obviously, whilst we still use a money-based ranking system, I think it is the least paying tournament on the calendar. Obviously, that gives it a certain level of importance. But you know, you'd rather win it than not.
The shootout is a whole lot of fun, okay? It's a brilliant 4 days. It's great action. It's never, ever short for entertainment. It's superb for that. And people saying, oh, it shouldn't be a ranking event, nice. Whether you think it should or you think it shouldn't, it is, okay? And I'll tell you now, when players get to probably the quarterfinals onwards, it becomes incredibly serious. Chris Wakelin, Chris listens to the podcast, friend of ours, great guy, Chris. That last year meant the absolute world to him, and so it should, by the way, as well. So it should. I think a lot of players go in there, as you do, I'm going to enjoy it, it's a shootout, I'm going to enjoy it, it's been great fun. When they start getting a little bit further on, they do take it very, very seriously. And it's, like I say, it's just great entertainment. If you can get to Swansea in December, you will have an absolutely cracking time. Like I say, the final day to be on the Saturday in Swansea Arena, that is going to be tremendous. Couple of weeks before Christmas, what's not to like?
I just remember it from last year because I, you know what? Every other tournament on the calendar is so serious. Every other week is like really, really serious. And there isn't much, you know, players socialising and stuff backstage. You know, we're there working. We're trying and, you know, you're trying your absolute best. Like, you know, the shootout is an opportunity to just, you know, have a bit of fun and be a little bit more social. And, of course, there's an incredible amount of crowd interaction. And I'm reminded of what happened last year. I walked out to play and someone's been, you know, designing songs. Now, of course, in my very early life and early pro career, I was quite religious and I was quite mouthy about it. And, you know,
you were mouthy about something, Sean, really?
I know that.
You had a strong opinion on something. That's not like you.
I know that doesn't sound like me at all. But believe it or not, I was quite opinionated back then and was very vocal about my religious beliefs. Now, I haven't set foot in a church since 2008 and would like to go on record. Because even on my Wikipedia page, which I check every now and again, it still has me down as a devout Christian and a devout born again and all of this. I am not. I haven't been to church for many, many years. I'm not religious at all. But I walked out this year at the shootout to a song that went something like Sean Murphy likes to. Watches songs of praise while he pops them on the bays or something like that.
What a tune. What a song. Fantastic. So there you go.
It doesn't roll off the tongue, does it?
It doesn't really, no. So that's the shootout. So it is that second weekend in December from the Wednesday to the Saturday now. Tickets available for that, as with all events, wst.tv/tickets. If you can go, you will have an absolutely brilliant time. I guarantee it. Now, at the end of the podcast today, we're not going to have the usual pointless question. To mark our first birthday, I have devised a very short quiz for Sean about the podcast, which he'll have to have a go at, see how many he can get right. It's going to be an interesting one because he knows nothing about it. However, before we get on to our listeners' questions, Sean, do you have a rant for me today?
Oh, I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I'm fuming.
Fuming?
Fuming about it.
Wow. Okay. Well, fair enough then. Let's get that done right now, shall we? It is time for Sean's rant. Sean Murphy, the magician, you have 1 minute and 47 seconds from the moment I say rant to the sound of the klaxon. Are you ready to rant?
Ready.
Okay, here you go then, Sean. 3, 2, 1, rant.
Okay, this rant has really got my goat. Flat pack furniture. What is happening to the world? Right, so this week it's been pertinent for me. I had some furniture. I knew I was going to have to assemble it. But when has this become the latest trade? I understand that certain brands bring out flat pack furniture and that's reflected in the price. You know, it's cheaper because you have to build it. But this furniture I've ordered wasn't the most expensive and it wasn't the cheapest. But now, like, self-assembly seems to be the thing. Why? I just want to buy the... I don't want to be on the team. I want to just have the new piece of furniture. I don't want to have to build it. What is going on? If you order a car from your local car dealership, you don't go, oh, yeah, no worries. It'll be delivered next week. You'll have to put it together, though, and the wheels come separately. Oh, and you want that, right? That's extra. It's ridiculous. The way the world's gone is just so silly. When I was a kid and my parents, if you'd have said to my mum or dad, this is flat pack, they'd have asked you to leave. Like, they just wouldn't have done it. It's ridiculous. And as I say, I appreciate you can go to IKEA, for instance. They've made it famous. They're around the world. And I've used them before. But, like, other brands now, it just seems to be common. What happened to just buying a piece of furniture and it comes ready? It comes, you don't have to be involved. You don't have to have watched the Discovery Channel and learned how to what dovetailing means and what all these little things are and all these little terminologies. I don't want to have to get the toolbox out and build it. I don't want to have to earn it and be part of it and hurt my fingers and look at it and go, yeah, I built that. I just want to have it. Why can't I have what I want?
Sorry. Flat pack furniture and you're doing dovetail joints.
That's not what I meant.
Did them at CDT in school. Just on this, by the way, I went to, have you heard about Furniture Land?
I have.
I went there, right? Worst theme park in the world, that place. There's no rides. They lure you in with the name, right? There's literally an escalator and that's it. Terrible place.
Terrible. One of the worst jokes of all time.
But joking
seriously,
aside.
Seriously, though. Flat pack furniture. What do you think? Like, I'm good at, and don't get this wrong, I'm good at it. I'm good at putting things together. You know, I can follow instructions. Absolutely no problem. I don't want to.
Right, now, I will hold my hands up completely. I am literally holding my hands up. I am the least practical person in the world, okay? I work a lot. And I work so I can get other people to do things that are practical because I just physically can't do them. I'm useless, okay? So at the moment, we've got a friend of mine fitting me a new bathroom, okay? And I'm completely in awe of this guy. You know, he's amazing what he can do. The stuff that he can do, he's taking a bloody long time over it, by the way, but the stuff that he can do is incredible. Oh, I should have been finished 2 weeks ago. There's still dust everywhere. It's killing me. But the stuff he can do is absolutely amazing. Flat pack furniture, I'm with you on this one, okay? Because it arrives, you open the box, and you just... I just die a little bit inside as I look at everything and think, this is going to be an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours of my life that I'm never, ever going to get back.
Then you get those people, they get right up my nose. They say, oh, if you've built it and if you've done it, they're a bit like people who like doing their own garden.
Oh, sense of achievement, Sean. It's a sense of achievement.
When you get such a sense of achievement, stuff it. Shove that sense of achievement up your what's it. I don't want to know about it. I want to buy the product. I'm happy to pay extra for someone else to build it. I don't want to build it, but preferably I want to buy it and have it delivered, built. I don't want to have to go through the process. You know, as I said, I know it's a bit of an extreme example, but you know, when you buy a car, it comes pre, you can just drive it away.
Yeah,
that's the type of thing we want.
There's your bag with the spark plugs in, there's your bag with your pistons, there's your bag with your tires in.
Oh, you'll get such a sense of achievement once you've worked out where the exhaust connects to the tail. Yeah,
the exhaust connects to the tail.
who cares? Like,
no, I'm with you on this one. Hate flat pack. Surely, just bring on the table fitters. I mean, they've got to be gods at that, don't they?
I tell you what they are good at. I tell you what the table fitters are really good at. And it, there's only only really players who get to events like on day one or the, you know, day minus one. And I used to see a lot of this when Brandon was still alive, because he was involved in the, you know, the organising of events. And I would encourage as many players as possible to see this, because there's so much goes into an event. But not putting the tables up, taking them down and then repackaging them so they can get on the lorry to go to the next.
Oh, it's amazingly quick.
It is incredible. These table fitters must be unbelievably good at Jenga.
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible. Do you know, obviously, the events that I work at, I'm there, we do the presentation at the end. I then have to go back into the media center after that and then do the social media interview with the winner, as you know. And
thank you.
Not that often, obviously, but as you know. And I'll do that interview, right? So they've done the presentation, they've done the walk around with the trophy, the selfies, the autographs and all that stuff. And then they'll probably do an interview for TV. And then they'll come in, they'll get interviewed by some journalists, and then they get interviewed by me. And I finish that interview, I'll walk back into the arena, and it's probably, I don't know, half an hour after the last ball's been struck. And it's, I mean, it's complete carnage in there, but the table's half down, the set's pretty much down, and it's amazing how quick. I mean, they literally swarmed up. The people just swarm on it and just break it all down, and it's amazingly quick the way they do it. So you're absolutely right. Yes, they are. But the rant was about flat pack furniture. Where do you stand? Are you with Sean? I actually think I am on this one. I think I'm with him. Not a fan at all. In fact, there are people out there that have started businesses who you can pay to come and do your flat pack.
Oh, not in Ireland, there isn't.
Oh, is there not?
When you go into these shops and order your things and you go, oh, can I pay extra to have somebody come and put it to... Sorry, that's not available in the Republic of Ireland.
There are some places you can get it. So where do you stand? Let us know all over social media at 147pod. That's at 147pod. Tell us what you think. Flat pack, are you in or are you out? Right, we're going to take a very short break, after which we will deal with all of our listener questions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. So as we've already said, this is a bit of a listener question special. We're going to rattle through as many as we can, try and clear the decks as we start the new season. So Sean, if you'd like to begin.
No worries. This one's in from 247 Snooker on Twitter. If Ronnie goes on to win his 8th world title, which is the greatest achievement? Him doing that over a longer period or Stephen Hendry's quickfire 7?
That's a great question, actually, because we're not saying who's the GOAT. We're actually comparing those two achievements between them. Now, I'm going to side with Ronnie here, I think. I think the longevity to go on as he did. I've said this before. I think Stephen retired too early. I think he should have carried on. And I think if he had have carried on, you never know. He could have hit form again and won another 1, 2, 3 world titles. We don't know. We'll never know. But for me, it's the longevity of Ronnie's career. I mean, let's not forget, he might not just go on to win 8. He could go on to win 10. We just don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that longevity is the key, isn't it? I think to do something like O'Sullivan's done, forgetting his eighth, I think, you know, just what he's achieved in equaling with seven, I mean, which is staggeringly an amazing achievement. But to have done it over such a long time, to have performed such a high level for such a long time, I think probably does edge him on this occasion. I'm always wary, and it's an argument that rages on social media. You can imagine on Facebook and stuff, it's, you know, there's people all the time wanting to, you know, rank in their goats and, you know, all this comparing eras and stuff. And you see it in all sports and all industries. I think it's a foolish argument to get into who's the, you know, who's this and who's that, and who's the best of all. Because things were different, and you're only as good as the people around you, and you know, Ray Reardon, and I love Ray to bits and lots of respect, you know, wouldn't have won six world titles if he'd been playing professionally 20 years later, 30 years later, or in today's game, just wouldn't have done. And players who've gone on to win multiple championships later afterwards wouldn't have done either. So I think it's a foolish argument to get into. I think what an amazing feather to have in your cap that you're even involved in that argument.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's seventh or eighth world championships were better? Like, I mean, what a question that is to debate. But I think in terms of dominance, though, whilst we're talking about O'Sullivan's longevity, we can't overlook the fact that Hendry did win seven in a relatively, you know, short.
Yeah, yeah.
Period of time, you know, and to, you know, he would often rock up to an event like the Masters. I mean, just think about this for a minute. He won the Masters that many times, they gave him the trophy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, the dominance that Hendry had was phenomenal. I don't think Ronnie's ever had that level of dominance, actually, because his career has been spread over a longer period of time, as we keep saying. But Hendry didn't play for as long, but my word, when he did. The dominance was frightening, wasn't it?
Yeah, frightening. And you know what they do. What they do have in common is that ability to have performed to an extremely high level most of the time.
Yep.
And with, you know, it seems so silly saying this of someone like Stephen Hendry, who's achieved so much, but you always knew what you were going to get with him. You knew he was always going to perform up there.
Yep.
I'm making a hand gesture. This isn't great for a podcast.
this is true.
He always performed right at the top, and he was very often, you know, very close to his absolute top form. So, an amazing career for both. I think we're, you know, past the point of debating who's the best of all time, but yeah, I think for me the longevity of O'Sullivan just edges it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would tend to agree with you as well. Harris GTJ on Twitter. How do players plan accommodation when there's so much time and variability? How do you plan it? Do some players go home? Sean, one for you, this.
Yeah, I think all of that's, you know, it's relevant on, you know, where you live and where's home for you in relation to the tournaments and all the rest of it. Of course, that whole life for me has changed since moving to the Republic of Ireland, because you can't play in an event. Let's say you lose an event on whatever day and you can't just jump in your car and go home.
Yep.
So that's changed things. But there is a bit of a split on tour between players, how they go about this. You know, a lot of players turn up, they book the hotel for the night before their match, the night of their match, and that's it. And if they win, they have to look for further accommodation, and it's a nice problem to have because you're still in the event. Other players, including myself, would book for an event for the entirety of that event. Not least because I think that helps garner a positive mentality that you're there for the event. But you have to be very careful with the type of rates you book with hotels. Yep. Or Airbnbs or whatever. You've got to make sure you don't click the cheapest rate, the first one you see. You've got to be on top of that stuff. You might have to pay a little bit more, but you build in that flexibility of cancellations and stuff like that. And most hotel chains are good with stuff like that. Flights were always the same as well. Like when we used to go to China, and we're very grateful to be going back this season. You know, when you're flying out to China for the Shanghai Masters or whatever it might be, I think there's a bit of a myth that, you know, we're looked after with those flights. We're not. They're all off our own back. And, you know, when do you book your return?
Yeah.
Of course, you can get a much better deal if you book a return, but it might, when do you book it for? So again, a lot of players would be booking the return the day after their first round. And if they go on to win their first round, they'd be straight onto the flight office that night in the hotel room. You coming down for a drink? Yeah, no, I've got to ring the flight company and get the room changed. I've got to get the flight changed. And they would consider that a nice problem to have. Again, I would always just book the flight for the day after the final. Obviously, nine times out of ten, that wouldn't fit. I'd have to book it for the day after my first round. But for me, it was always about, one, you can get a better deal, obviously, if you know your dates. But two, it never sat well with me booking my exit from an event whilst the event was still on.
Yeah.
Like that's never sat well with me.
Yeah, I get that. And I think World Snooker, correct me if I'm wrong, I think World Snooker always offer a hotel option to the players. They always have like a deal set up with the hotel. Is that right?
There is usually, again, nine times out of ten, a recommended hotel that World Snooker will have done a deal with, which, funnily enough, sometimes, if you just look at the numbers, actually sometimes appears to be slightly more expensive. And we're talking pounds in the difference here. Yeah. It can be more expensive than you would find online. But, of course, World Snooker do build into those rates the flexibility of if player A loses round one, they've got the cancellation policy, they get the money back and all the rest of it, and all of these things. So you have to cut your cloth accordingly in everything, of course, in life. You know, you can't, you can't stay in the Ritz and worry about the price of it.
Absolutely.
You can't have it all ends up. But everyone has to, plough their own furrow.
Absolutely. I know some players tend to can Airbnb as well, as opposed to hotels. Some do that. I think Ronnie sometimes in Sheffield, didn't he have a houseboat at one point? I don't know if he still does. He had a houseboat in Sheffield, I think.
Yeah, I think he did. I actually, last season, you've just mentioned it, I used a lot of Airbnbs last season. Just either places we didn't know or just wanted to try something different. I really enjoy that homely sort of feel to an Airbnb where you can go and you can fill the kitchen with your stuff and you can do all your own laundry. And, when Robbie's doing my brains in, I can just go to my room. I did quite enjoy that. And I think this was the sort of the crux of the question, though, is that with an Airbnb, I think I'm right, unless I've missed it, you have to book for the full time.
Yeah, you do.
There is no comeback. So if you book for a week and you're done after 3 days, you still have to pay for the week.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I don't think you can cancel them.
No, so that's the payoff.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that's answered your question, Harris GTJ.
Dazzler again on Twitter. If a prime Ronnie played a prime Hendry, who wins?
Right. Now, this is a very different question to the previous one about these two, isn't it? And this is, as you said, there's always a lot of chat about Ronnie and Hendry. A prime Ronnie against a prime Hendry. Wow.
Of course, this goes right against what I said a minute ago, isn't it, about not comparing eras and comparing players.
Yeah, but this
like
is, people compare them, as we said. People compare them all the time. I think that's reflected in these questions. So
I think this is much more difficult to answer than you might think at first thought. I think for me, obviously having studied and watched both of them from being a young boy, I think O'Sullivan has a much more complete game than Stephen Hendry. You listen to Stephen's punditry, he's very open now and talks very clearly about he wouldn't want to get involved in these safety battles. He was never the best tactician. He would always want to go down fighting. And I think now a prime Ronnie would just tie him up.
I think that's what it comes down to. I agree with you on that. I think that's what it comes down to. I think Ronnie's all-round game is stronger. I think match play-wise, yeah. Yeah, I think you've got to give it to Ronnie. I do.
However, I think there's the intimidation factor. And I think you've seen it with players over the years. O'Sullivan's as susceptible to everyone else if you get on top of him. He has cracked before. He's not impervious to pressure. And I think a prime Hendry might have had it in him to have rattled O'Sullivan and might have put it on him a little bit.
So there you go. Sean is full on breaking that fence right now. You are sat atop the fence with splinters in your behind. Yeah, absolutely. Sitting right on the fence. What do you think, everyone out there? At 147pod, who wins? A prime Ronnie and a prime Hendry. One for the snooker fans out there. Okay, Tom Price on Twitter. Right, this was during the Worlds, okay, when you were in commentary. Sean has made a ridiculous comment in commentary about Lisowski That's Jack Lizowski, of course, having more talent than Ronnie O'Sullivan. There is a lot of evidence to suggest you are talking complete rubbish. Now, there were quite a few variations on this with varying levels of abuse aimed towards yourself. How can you justify that comment saying that Jack Lizowski has more talent than Ronnie O'Sullivan?
Well, I suppose point number one, Tom, is that I'm an expert and you're not.
Oh, he's gone there, isn't he? Wow.
I suppose that's my defence if we're in court. I'm actually an expert on this subject and I've been studying it for 32 years. Whereas I suspect, Tom, you haven't. So,
well, yeah, just upset our listeners.
Sean's made a ridiculous comment. Well, you know, I'll decide if my comment's ridiculous or not about snooker. If we're talking about flat pack furniture, I'm happy to be told I'm being ridiculous.
I'm going to say, when a question comes in from a listener, right, and it begins, Sean has made a ridiculous comment, I have to keep reading just to find out which one he's referring to.
Yeah, you'll have to be more specific.
Right.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, I actually do remember making that comment, and I stand by it. I think Jack Lizowski could be the most naturally gifted, talented snooker player we've ever seen. The way he goes about it and the way he, you know, they talk about that old phrase, the cue looks as if it's an extension of the player's arm. I mean, is there a player who's ever graced a snooker table who's easier on the eye to watch than Jack Lizowski?
I was just going to say, it's a very, very different question. You cannot confuse who's the better player, okay? No. You cannot confuse those two things. Someone having more talent, I will tell you now, from experience, from talking to other players, everyone loves to watch Jack Lizowski. Every other player on the tour, if you ask them, well, what player do you enjoy watching? The answer, 9 times out of 10, will be Jack Lizowski. For that exact reason, he takes on shots that he's no right to take on, and he gets them. Yes, it's not transferring into winning tournaments yet. Yet it's not, because he's come very, very close. But that could well come. But from an actual talent perspective, I've got to sort of back Sean up on this. He's right up there. When you look at natural talent, you look at natural ability, Jack Lizowski is right up there with some of the best that have ever played the game. As Sean said, for all his reasons, he said, you know, the cue looks like an extension of his own arm. He is an absolute joy to watch. And when he's in full flow, he knocked you out of, was it the UK?
Was the UK Championship,
It was the UK. He was blistering that day. And I'm not just saying this, he knocked you out. He was in incredible form. And when Jack plays like that, there's not a player in the world can beat him. The problem is, he doesn't play like that every match. But when he does play like that, my word, firstly, there isn't a player that'll beat him. Secondly, oh, it's beautiful to watch. As a snooker fan, it really is incredible to watch.
But I think, just to, you know, close the curtain on this particular question, I think what we've done with this podcast, as we celebrate our first birthday, you know, we've opened up an avenue of interaction. And I'm always very, very happy to listen to people's opinions on snooker. I'm happy to debate with people. I'm happy to take on, you know, questions and opinions. But I think that we then have to accept that I'm usually right. And so, Tom, I stand by my, in your words, ridiculous comment.
I wonder where you were going then for a second.
As Tom unsubscribes from the podcast, we accept that I'm an expert and you're not.
So now you've sung today, right? You've sung on the podcast. You've now upset two listeners that have taken their time and energy to send us questions in. You just...
Two?
I swear, you're trying to crash this podcast. You really
are. Who else am I upset?
Anyway, let's move on, shall we, Sean?
Right. Mike on Twitter. Oh.
It's the big one, isn't it? It's the big question. We're going deep.
Do capers have a role to play in the classic egg mayonnaise sandwich? Well, whilst I'm sick in my mouth, Phil, you can lead with this one.
Right. No, I'm going to I'm going to declare my position early on this. I have never eaten an egg mayonnaise sandwich. I would never eat an egg mayonnaise sandwich. I think they are one of the most vile things on the entire planet. When I live in York, when someone opens an egg mayonnaise sandwich in Leeds, I can smell it here. It's disgusting. As someone that's worked in an office environment before, as soon as someone opens one of those horrible, vile, disgusting things, the whole office stinks of egg mayonnaise sandwich. It's grim. Do you know what? No, I don't think capers play a role in it. I don't think egg mayonnaise sandwiches should play a role in the world, if I'm honest. Sean?
Wow.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Wow. I love an egg mayonnaise sandwich.
You would, wouldn't you?
But I think capers are, along with one of my early rants about wasps, what is their purpose? Why are they here?
Are you putting capers in the wasps envelope here?
Capers have no role to play in life, full stop. They shouldn't be involved. Two related questions for you, because you've rocked my world with your egg mayo revelation.
Vile.
I've forgotten what they're called. Those anchovies.
Anchovies?
Yes or no?
Yes.
Pineapple on a pizza?
No.
Wow. Let's move on.
Go on, go on then. Anchovies, yes or no?
Anchovies, yes.
Okay, so we agree on that one. Pineapple on a pizza?
Yes.
Let's not get into the whole sweet, savoury debate. I don't get it. Never have done, never will do. No. Chocolate with beef. Doesn't go. Doesn't work. Sorry, but no. It's the same thing. It's sweet and savoury. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work. It's just all wrong. Anyway, let's move on. Daniel Bradley on Twitter. When the MC says, your winner winning X amount of pounds in prize money, how much does the player actually get of that? Now, I can answer this. So for Sean, for instance, Taxman takes 40%, Robbie takes 40%, Sean gets 20%. Is that right?
Very close.
It's just about there. So go on then, Sean. Give us a rough idea. So if the player wins, I know everyone's different, the player wins £100,000 in prize money, how much does a player actually get?
It's an interesting question because everyone's set up slightly differently. Most of it, I would say. All prize money has a certain percentage deducted, what's called the WPBSA levy.
Yeah.
So I think that's 2.5% of all prize money that everyone gets is deducted and given to WPBSA, which, you know, amongst other things, helps pay for things like every member of the tour gets private medical care provided by the WPBSA. And obviously, you know, WPBSA need funding and help to run.
It helps the growth of the game as well, which is a great thing, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. So all of that stuff. After that, I think out of any prize money, any outstanding fines, or if you've been naughty and you've been deducted, or you've been whatever, you might have a slap on the wrist or a fine to pay or whatever, I think that gets deducted. There used to be a situation where we used to be going back to an earlier question about travel. The tour used to have a relationship with a travel company who you could book your travel to the Far East, and then the cost of that travel would be deducted out of any prize money at the back end. So you, from a cash flow point of view, you were never down the money traveling to China. It just came out of any future prize money. But apart from that, you know, depending on how that player is personally set up, i.e. as a sole trader or as a limited company or whatever it might be, you know, I think the player gets pretty much close to, you know, all of it.
Yeah, so you pay the tax that everyone else pays. If you've got a manager, obviously you've got to pay your manager as well. I guess they all get a percentage of your earnings, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's set up differently. A manager might get a percentage of earnings. You know, I think it's rare that players pay anyone a percentage of their on-table earnings. I think commercially, I think there are lots of players with agents and managers who would get cuts and percentages of any revenue they bring in through the door, be that, you know, sponsorships with companies or endorsements or appearances or whatever that might be. They would then be on a cut of those earnings. On-table earnings, but they're almost sacrosanct. And somebody would have to, somebody would want to be contributing in a very large way to be paid any percentage of those. But that, that, that does happen with some players.
Yeah, yeah, like maybe, I don't know, co-hosting a podcast with you, something like that.
Yeah, no, you could be in, yeah.
Hope so.
But I know coaches, I know there are coaches on the tour who insist on it. They won't work with a player unless they're on a percentage of their on-table earnings, which is, you know, that's up for debate as to how you feel about that. Yeah, no, as I say, it would vary in terms of whether a player is set up as a limited company or whether that player is a sole trader and obviously their own individual relationships with HMRC or the revenue here in the Republic of Ireland. And you would just, you know, you would push on and after those deductions, I think the player gets close to 100% of whatever the MC says.
So there you go. Okay, fantastic. Right, we have to move at some pace now through these next few, I think.
Move at pace. Siggy, yes. On Instagram, so lucky to catch up with you during the championship. I'm from Iceland. Do you prepare differently for the World Championship than you do for other tournaments?
Before Sean answers this, Siggy, thank you for listening over in Iceland. That's absolutely, it's great to know you're in one of our finest supermarkets listening to this. No, but seriously, it's great to know you listen over in Iceland. Thank you for listening. So go on then, Sean. Do you prepare differently for the Worlds to how you do for other tournaments?
Yes. But only in one way. In the lead up to the World Championships, I will vary the times I play because the World Championships is the only tournament. Well, it's certainly only one of the. It's the only one of the big major championships that has a morning session. And so, you know, the old adage was that snooker players were sort of creatures of the night and almost vampire-like. And, you know, the old players of the 80s wouldn't have enjoyed many 10 o'clock sessions, that's for sure. They were always a bit more susceptible at that time in the morning. I would vary my practice times just so I'm a little bit more attuned to maybe practicing it. I might do a few hours at 10. And then I might return back and hit some more balls at 7, just because you would have those days where you have to play twice in a day. And for, you know, 90%, 99% of the tournaments throughout the season, that just isn't the way you do it. So you wouldn't be used to that. Apart from that, I think it's pretty much the same as every other week.
There you go. That answers your question. So thank you, Siggy, for listening. I hope that answers your question. Tutin Canute on Instagram. I was going to check these to make sure I'm not being tricked. This was sent after you played CJ Hui in Sheffield. Do you believe in bogeymen? Do you believe that there's those players out there that you just can't beat?
No, with the asterisk of there are some quite stark examples of it though throughout the, you know, snooker history. I mean, am I right in saying Mark Johnston Allen?
Yes.
Always beat Stephen Hendry.
Yeah, absolutely. Ronnie's got one as well. Is it Peter Lyons? No?
Lyons has got a winning, he's got a positive win streak against all the class of 92.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's phenomenal. It's crazy, really. But so do you believe in bogeymen? Sean says no. I think yes, actually. I do think it gets in your head a little bit.
I will say, as I say for myself, CJUE aside, there was a player called Mark Gray, from sort of Peterborough away that way, who in my early pro, late amateur, early pro, just couldn't beat him.
Wow.
Couldn't beat him. And he went on to have a very, very good career in nine ball pool, a very respectable career in that. Didn't work out for him in snooker, but I couldn't beat him. So it's a no with an asterisk.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. That's, yeah. But, oh, go on then. I'm going to delve a bit here. So the next time you play C, yeah, because he's on the tour, he's a tour player now and everything else. Mentally, do you approach that game differently or not?
No, because I don't really think that the two games we've had previously, which have both been final frame deciders right to the last few balls, I think 6-5 loss at the UK Champs and the 10-9 at the World Champs this year, you know, really bear any significance on whatever and wherever the next match we play might be. I wouldn't be one. I don't like to bring the past with me anyway. I would be quite good at dumping that. And every time you shake a player's hand, it's a fresh start. And whatever happened before doesn't come into it. Of course, there are players with terrible records against players. I think Ali Carter's record against Ronnie O'Sullivan is staggeringly bad.
Yeah.
And that has to be in his head when they rock up. Mark Williams hadn't beaten him for, you know, something like 15 years or something silly. It was a ridiculous amount of time. I think in general, most players would be pretty good at treating every match, you know, like a blank canvas just going at it.
Putting that way and carrying on. There you go. Okay, happy days.
Karen Rainbow from Instagram. When do you think they'll finally change the format, which leaves quarterfinal four at the World Championships playing in consecutive sessions?
Yes.
This is a good question, this. This happens every year at the World Championships. For those that don't know, the last quarterfinal to finish at the Worlds every season has back-to-back sessions. Sessions two and three pretty much run into each other. The middle session of eight frames usually overruns and gets pulled off a frame early to allow them an extra 20 minutes to prepare for coming back at seven to play the match to a finish. The reason this happens, Karen, and the reason it probably won't change, is that for the TV coverage, they like to have a match finishing in every session on that day, or certainly, you know, for the second half of the previous day and that last Thursday, or the last Wednesday it is, of the championship when the quarterfinals finish. They like to have a match coming to a finish in every session. And I'm not aware of there being a better format that ensures that. Now, it's certainly not ideal for the players who have to play in that quarter.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? But like you say, I don't think... You look at the scheduling and it... I mean, it's rammed, isn't it? You know, it really is packed. And I'm sure if there was a way around it, they would find a way. But there seems to be more chat about this than there ever has been. So maybe it's something that will get looked at. I don't know. I don't know if there is anything that can be done, to be honest. It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because it's not just a case of you play that quarterfinal, you've to play the eight frames in the afternoon. As I say, you often get dragged off early. You've then got less time to prepare for the night match. It's often one of the biggest matches of your life, trying to get through to the semi-finals. It's a big deal. But then whoever does get through is absolutely knackered.
Yep.
And has to play the semi-final. You know, mathematically, they're only halfway through the championship at that point in terms of frames needed. They've then got to get themselves back up off the canvas and go again in the semis the next day. That leads into another one about where we slightly differ from the tennis. Like, take Wimbledon, the men's semi-finals is on the Friday. Both winners of those semi-finals get a day off to prepare for the final. And in the snooker, of course, you have that one semi-final that always finishes late on the Saturday night. Meanwhile, whoever won the other semi-final in the afternoon has got their feet up. They've had an Italian with their wife. They've had a bottle of wine, and they're watching everyone else sweat. So there is it's up for debate. Is there an advantage if you're in one of those earlier matches and you get a little bit of extra time to prepare? I think there is, you know.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, there possibly is. But or some players would say, well, no, you've played, therefore you're in the swing of it. Just carry on. And that's been borne out. You know, I think if you actually look at the results over however many years, I think someone did this analysis and it was pretty much 50-50, those that have been playing late at night and then playing the next day, to those that have had a rest. So, I don't know. What I would say is, for those two players playing in quarterfinal four, it's the same for both players. So
Are you making that grave error, Philip, of bringing actual facts to the table?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. But I'm sure I heard it on another podcast somewhere. So there might not be actual facts. Anyway, moving on. You've just mentioned Wimbledon, which is interesting. Dazzler2211 on Instagram. The winner of Wimbledon gets a miniature replica of the trophy to keep. What do you think of this happening in snooker?
Already happens.
There you go. Well, you get That's a miniature exactly replica, do you?
You get a miniature replica, yeah. Not of all the events, but certainly of the Triple Crowns. I think you get a miniature replica of the UK. I think you get a full-size replica of the Masters, and you get a miniature replica of the World Championship trophy.
So there you go. So it happens for the Triple Crown events. It doesn't happen for the others. However, I've got a funny story on this. There's it was Neil Robertson. He'd started to get replicas made of all the trophies that he'd won. So he'd win a trophy. While he's got that trophy, he would have a replica made of that trophy. And he won the Champion of Champions, which Champion of Champions is like this big silver bowl thing, right? So he's in the process, I think this was what he told me, he's in the process of getting this made, and then he noticed this trophy, right? Now this that trophy isn't just used for the Champion of Champions. I think it may have been the World Cup of Pool. I think it was the Ping Pong World Cup as well, I think. And he was watching another event and he saw his Champion of Champions trophy being held aloft by the winners. I think it was some pool event, I'm not sure. And he was just like, that's the Champion of Champions trophy and it's on a different base or something. And he's just like...
You'd think Matchroom could afford to buy new trophies, wouldn't you?
It's a great trophy, but I think it has been recycled a few times in the, you know, it's a green world and everything else. So, yeah, it's not always quite as it seems. Anyway, on the subject of trophies, Liam McMullen on Facebook, what are your top three snooker trophies of all time based purely on the aesthetics?
Yeah, very simple one, this for me. World Championship trophy.
We agree.
Absolutely iconic.
Yep.
Masters trophy, the Paul Hunter trophy.
Love it.
Absolutely iconic.
This is where we're about...
the ones it replaced.
We're about to disagree now, but go on.
The old Grand Prix trophy.
No.
Which looked like a bigger size of the claret jug from golf.
Yeah, not having it. Boring. Okay, I agree with you on the first two. The third one was a trophy that was only won once.
Here he is. Anorak.
I think Ronnie won it, and it was the Coral, I think it was called the Coral Cup, which was for the winner of the Coral Series, which was the World Grand Prix, the Players and the Tour. So if it had been this year, you'd have won this.
All right.
I think, because you won the Players and the Tour. There was a nice cash bonus with it as well.
But don't rub it in.
This trophy was massive, right? It was huge. I don't know where it is. I'm guessing Ronnie's probably got it. I think it was Ronnie that won it. It was absolutely enormous, and it was intricate. Oh, it was a serious trophy. It was like something you get in ice hockey. It was massive.
I think you've dreamt this.
I'm going to find a picture, and I will tweet a picture of the Coral Cup. I might have a picture of me with it, actually, because I announced the presentation of it. It's huge. This thing is absolutely massive, and I don't know where it's gone. But the Coral Series, I think the bonus of the Coral Series or the Coral Cup only lasted 1 year, I think. So I think it was only one winner.
Phil, you've chosen a trophy that you claim to be so iconic you can't even remember where you saw it.
I'm going
to
find a picture of it.
You are an absolute embarrassment.
I will find a picture.
The journalism professional world.
I'm not a professional journalist. I'm far from it. I'm a very unprofessional and not a journalist.
You don't say.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, right, there is one more listener question, but we're going to hold that one over because we're going to actually answer that one properly. So Sam Copley on Instagram, you may well know what question we're talking about. We will answer that one properly in a slightly deeper way another time. Thank you very much for your questions. If you've got any questions, get them into us. Don't just put them on our feed. Please private message or direct message us at 147pod and we will build up another bank of questions. However, to end our first birthday podcast, Sean, I have a bit of a quiz for you, okay? Now, this quiz is a quiz about the podcast. More specifically, it's a quiz about a part that you play on this podcast.
Right.
Sean Murphy,
nervous.
I am giving you, by my reckoning, before today, you have done 18 rants on the podcast. Before today. I'm going to give you 60 seconds, one whole minute, to name as many of your rant topics...
Oh my God.
As you can. So these are things you were so wound up about that you ranted on a podcast, specifically this one. Okay, so I'm going to give you 60 seconds. It will end with a klaxon, as your rants always do. As many as your podcast rant topics as you can. Ready, steady, go.
Well, I can't believe you've thrown this on me for one without telling me. So I'll have to use the one from today, flat pack furniture.
Yeah, I did say before today. Carry on.
One of the worst things of all time. Last time out was trolley tokens, where you still have to carry cash. You can't take a trolley at a supermarket unless you've got a pound coin. Right.
You've only got a minute at this, Sean.
Ridiculous. The first one was wasps. What are they for? They're like the most offensive thing in the world. They provide nothing to the world apart from misery and disgrace. Much like Irish drivers there was another one. Terrible drivers in this country, particularly. I've been to India, and they're better. Doctors, receptionists, the absolute scourge of the universe. No, Maureen, I'm not telling you about my gout in my kneecap. It's none of your business. Put me through to a doctor. You haven't done the training. Oh, goodness me. People who put used wrappers back in tins of sweets.
That was never actually a rant, that one. You moaned about it, but it wasn't a rant. You were moaning about your son Harry, but it was not a rant. You've got 4 out of 18. That's terrible. The trouble is, it comes into your head and you immediately rant about it, so you don't get another answer out. Right, okay, here we go.
Yeah, do you know the worst thing about this is that as you were building up to it, as you were building up to the question, I half guessed what you were going to say.
Oh, really?
And I opened on my phone. I have a folder on my phone of all my old podcast rants.
Oh, wow, he has as well. Look at these. Goodness me, I can see those people. Sorry, this is podcasting. Those people that can't see what I'm looking at, he has actually got a list of this. Okay, well, here you go then. These are the ones you missed, right?
Go.
So you had 1 minute. Your rants have been about driving standards, particularly in Ireland, being called big man, wasps, inept airport travellers, glitter, hotel room plug sockets, plastic food packaging, specifically smoked salmon, doctor's receptionists, mobile phone reception, noisy hotel workmen, particularly at the Novotel in York, men who wear shorts all the time. That's my friend Grant, who called me today about the trolley tokens. DC Universe films. People
Grant have a coat on at the same time.
People not washing their hands. Waiters not writing orders down. People who block security in airports. Snooker fans coughing. I think that was a Welsh Open, was it? Football shirts wearing adults and shopping trolleys are the ones I've got. So you got 4. That was terrible. That was really poor.
I would have got them all. But as you said, when you open it up, like I'm still passionate about these things.
You just seethe, don't you? I could see it in your face, to be fair. The first one you said,
still annoys me. Still annoys me. I think the one that still gets me though is the inept, absolutely inept airport travellers.
Oh, it's a killer.
Is this your first time? Is this your first time in an airport? Is it? Oh, I remember my first flight as well. Oh, it's not. Oh, it's not your first time through the security line. Move out of the way then.
I travelled through Stansted the other week, and you didn't have to take your liquids out of your bag or anything. Oh, it was heaven. They were like, no, new thing. Just leave more in your bag. Just put your bag down. What? Really? Oh, happy days. Brilliant. Right, that was the podcast. Did you enjoy it? Any comments at 147pod all across social media? We will be back in around about 2 weeks' time where we will do our full season preview. We will run through what we think might happen and we'll run through the fortunes of probably the top 16 players in the world. Sean, good luck for Championship League on Wednesday.
Thank you very much, sir.
No worries. What prediction? Top of the group?
I would say that's highly unlikely. there are prisoners currently serving time in Guantanamo Bay who will have done more practice than me in recent weeks, who would be readier to go out and play professional snooker. I really have maximised and enjoyed my time off. For me, my season, you know, really will kick off with the European Masters out there in Firth in a month or two's time, and I'm really looking at Championship League as a measuring device to see where I am. But nonetheless, I'm looking forward to it.
Rewind back to the start of the podcast when Sean talks about the 147 he scored in the exhibition last weekend. Anyway, Sean, have a brilliant 2 weeks. I will catch up with you then. Thank you ever so much to everyone for listening. Do get involved at 147pod across all forms of social media. We'll see you again in a fortnight. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.